Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words featuring JJR. This is take two, so I'm hoping that this is going to be one-tenth as enjoyable as the last one. I have the same exact outline in front of me, and we're going to attempt to repeat verbatim what we did. By the time this show airs, it'll be almost time for It's Not Dead 2 Fest, where I will be going with Mr. Fish, who's to my right, to see Rancid, Dropkick Murphys, Voodoo Glow Skulls, Mad Caddies. Apparently, there's a bunch of other bands that they haven't even announced yet. So I'm hoping for a Sex Pistols reunion. That'd be pretty rad. They're doing it out on San Bernardino grounds, where they've done Taste of Chaos many times, and they actually did the previous It's Not Dead Fest with Bad Religion, NOFX, The Descendants, Pennywise. So it seems to be a scene ground. I'm hoping that this year is going to be really awesome. I've never done It's Not Dead, and I'm honored to be representing Idobe. It was brought up actually by a guy who is on our show by the time this interview airs, Mike Kubilos with Earshot Media. And he has been a publicist for lots of indie bands for as long as I can remember. In fact, he actually worked for my old band, The City Drive, when we were on the subdivision of Columbia Records, and now he's doing huge bands like Real Big Fish and pretty much the entire Rise roster. And I got reacquainted with him when Mirror Eyes, now called Floods, signed to In Vogue Records, and he does that entire label's roster. So he's a good guy. He hooked this up. Hopefully we will have a lot of fun. I'm going to wear so much suntan lotion because I turn into a lobster. I'm sure Fish does too. I think it's just in the Long Island jeans. So, as always, Waldman's Words, see, I can't even pronounce my name, I'm so excited, we're just so grateful that so many people even want to be on this show. I get submissions, and it's hard to filter through, but as I said, I'm focusing on as many behind-the-scenes people as possible. But JJR actually has a caveat, because he also plays in a band called Keep Flying, but you might know him from the Wonder Years, where he was on the road with them all the time. Or you might know him from Warped Roadies, where he wrestled like a freaking champion. But I'm a big 4 Year Strong fan, and he is actually what makes 4 Year Strong. Wow, I really just said that. I'm kind of proud of myself for that one. So stick around for this interview. It's going to be very informative. We're going to be reaching out to a fellow Long Islander named JJR. And every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, tune into Waldman's Words. Stay tuned for these commercials and enjoy yourself. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words, take two with JJR, who is currently in the loading process.
That is true.
Are you eating too?
Well, I got a mint. I just went to my drummer's. I just went to a Thai place with my drummer and his family, and we left a very large tip because Peter used to work with the guy at a smoothie place, which was a front for something else.
Dude, in this place, in my hometown, I'm going to totally out this place. There's this place called the Whale's Tail in the west end of Long Beach. It's totally a Coke front, 100%.
Yeah, it happens. But we left a very large tip because he knew the guy from back in the day, so I felt inclined to reach my hand in the mint bowl at the end of the aisle and take all of them.
You deserved every single last mint. Do you remember the candy Bonkers? They're kind
yes,
of similar to Starburst.
I never really ate that.
Oh, man. You just reminded me of that.
What I did used to eat were, I used to buy them from the Looney Tunes, the record store in my town.
Mm-hmm.
There were these vials called Crave, and they were like these, they were little like vials with these crazy colored sugars.
Like Fun Dip?
Almost like a, yeah, like a pixie stick Fun Dip kind of thing. It was called Crave. And it was very like 90s, and you look at it now and it feels like it was like drugs. Like it looks like it was supposed to be like drugs.
Well, you know? Chances are those sugars are filled with so many chemicals, they pretty much are drugs. But
right.
I remember there was this thing called Yummy Mummies, which was the Fun Dip, the sugar sticks, but they were just different flavors of sugar sticks in the shape of mummies.
I knew that.
Anyway, Yummy Mummies make everyone excited.
Yummy Mummies sounds great.
Dude, it was pretty yummy money. So, you're from Long Island, I'm from Long Island, but I know that we met. Let's talk about this again. We met a few times, but the most monumental meeting was when I was with someone who I'm not very close with, but he right. got me tickets to see 4 Year Strong at the Glass House with, I believe it was Transit, Such Gold, and I think Seaway. Correct me if I'm wrong. And we met you because...
I don't even remember who was on the bill, to be honest with you.
But you remember this guy.
I remember the guy. Because, and I remember I was talking about this last time because you asked me, what is the... You asked me to mention a tour story or something of importance or relevance where I had to react...
where you had to use better judgment to fix a solution.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right, so... So this is for your listeners. This is how we met once before. There's a guy who showed up and was walking around the backstage. And what, he had told you that he had passes to get in?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Well, basically, he hit me up like day of, and he's like, yo, do you want to see 4 Year Strong? I know you like them. I'm like, of course I do. He's like, would you want to go early and go see an acoustic set of 4 Year Strong and do like a Q&A? I'm like, are you kidding me? Of course I do. Like, I like them. I'm not like a hardcore fanboy, but I genuinely like their music. And to see them play acoustic would be awesome. So, yeah.
Right.
So we went and we had passes.
Right. And when you say passes, these people, most people that know passes might be a wristband, maybe a sticky little thing that you get at the front door, but he actually had laminates.
Yep.
And they weren't VIP or anything like that. They were just straight up the exact laminate that I'm wearing.
A laminate that a band member or a crew member would have.
Correct.
Wow.
Right, so that happened. And so once we realized this guy was back there, it was brought to my attention by somebody on the tour. I was like, well, I don't know this guy. Any of these bands know this guy? I do give all the bands on tours like extra passes in case they have, you know, a friend coming for a few days or an extra crew person, whatever. Asked every band. No one knows who the hell this guy is. So I approach him. I'm like, where'd you get these? And that's where it started. He came up with the most bogus rumor. Not rumor. Most bogus.
he started a rumor about himself.
Yeah, saying that. He talked to somebody at Hopeless Records. Mind you, this is not a Hopeless Records tour. And also, mind you, I've never once made a laminate through a label. I just get them made myself.
And also, mind you, there was not a Hopeless band on this tour. So it was, like, completely random.
So he's like, oh, so-and-so at Hopeless. You know, they hooked me up. They gave me passes. And I'm like, well, they wouldn't have passes because they're all in my... Pelican case. So I made them. Oh, well, that's where I got them. Well, no, you didn't, because there's physically no way that that is possible. And he just still couldn't not break the lie. And we came to the conclusion that the day before he was at the show.
Troubadour, I think.
Troubadour?
Yeah.
Was it the Troubadour?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was at the Troubadour. And someone had seen him walking around the backstage area, because there's really no security there, and it's just like up and around the stage. So... came to the conclusion that your kind of friend straight up just went for it, went into the green room, saw my laminates, which I used to keep in the top part of my Pelicans, so when my Pelicans open, you could see them. Now I keep them buried. But
because of this?
Went in and just straight up took laminates. He took laminates out. He stole from my Pelican.
That's not cool.
He stole from my Pelican at another show so that he can come to other shows on the tour. I mean, we did take the laminates back, and I'd like to think myself as a pretty forgiving person on most things, and so I didn't kick him out of the show. I just took the laminates, and I had some words. I wasn't threatening, and nothing like that. I just said he was stupid, because that's the easy thing to do. But that was crazy.
Well, what was...
I never had somebody just straight up, like, lie. Well, that's not true. I've had...
But when they get caught, usually they're kind of submissive about it and apologetic.
Yeah, he went with the story all the way through and through. He was committed to the story. He was straight up committed.
He was doing some improv. Well, I'm grateful that I got to go to that show, and I'm grateful that I was there to witness this, because I learned a lot about what not to do. Number one, do not lie.
I feel like stealing. Well, let's not have a conversation about stealing, because. I was young once and had no money and was in bands that made no money.
Mm-hmm.
So I did my fair share of whatever.
Survival.
But taking from, like, that's just a weird thing to do. Like, these are people that you, and especially to have that, I'll say he had a lot of balls. He had a lot of cojones to just straight up come in and own it and just be like, no, I didn't take that. No, it was given to me.
Well, he said he got backstage passes when I was with him, and I was like, okay, that's cool. I definitely don't want to step on anyone's toes because, like, I played in bands before that have played venues large and small, and it's pretty easy to spot the person who shouldn't be there, and that's because you don't know them.
Correct.
So,
I mean, I give out backstage stuff all the time. Like, we just finished this 4-year tour in Game Changer on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Big Kent one.
Swim had like 80 people, family, but then you just look at them, you're like, well, you know, whatever. It's got to be family. It's grandma's there and stuff. Huh? I don't know yet.
I heard that show was pretty massive. I heard that, like, the old Handguns reunited for that show, and it was like...
That is true. That's another thing we could talk about.
What do you want to say?
Well, I don't really got to say anything. Those are my friends. They've been my friends for a long time. I got to bring those with me. Yep.
Game Changer is quite a venue. It's
Game Changer, we had a very big problem with this weekend. I'll never do a show there again.
Why? What? Whoa, let's talk about this.
It's a disaster. PA didn't work. The lights didn't work. We got about $4,000 post-show in gear damage. It was raining in the venue.
Wait. It was raining in the venue? Is there a leak?
CO2 that went off that, between that and the poorly ventilated room, it was just dripping condensation, which destroyed about $4,000 worth of gear.
That's a lot of fucking gear. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was very upsetting. Like, when we announced the tour, fans were upset that we were doing it there, and now we know why. I never been to the room before this weekend, so I didn't possibly think it could be that crazy. But it truly was one of the worst venues I've ever been to.
I've been to a show there, but it didn't rain inside the show, so I'd say this one was slightly worse.
Yeah. This was very upsetting. I mean, the show was the biggest of the tour. So when you got the biggest of the tour, you have a little bit of an expectation, and none of those expectations were met, which was sad.
Well, let's go to more happier stuff. Let's talk about happier stuff.
Fans reacted, like, the social media response was like people were genuinely like bummed out.
Oh, I thought you were about to say like there was like an Altamont thing with the Rolling Stones, like that kind of reaction. I'm glad that no one was.
No, they were just genuinely bummed out.
That sucks. At least they were peaceful though. But we met, we got reacquainted by my buddy and your buddy, Alex Rossiter, who until I think yesterday worked for Webster Hall. And now he's doing some major talent buyer booking. And we just were introduced over email, talked on the phone, and got along.
Who's
and,
it? Alex Rossiter?
Yes.
Who are you talking about? Yeah, okay.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. Well, that's got to be packed differently. That sucks.
I mean, that's also a metaphor. I have to pack a lot of things differently, too.
Yeah, Webster, owned by AG and Bowery and Barclays.
Yep.
I'm not sure what's happening. They're renovating. I mean, everyone I know that's an agent that has holds there
mm-hmm.
for the rest of the year. All the holds have to be moved because the venue is going to close for renovations from August to December, I believe.
It's like House of Blues out here. House of Blues out here was like, it was chaos, and now it's going to be a hotel, the one on West Hollywood.
All the people that I know that work there don't know if they're keeping their jobs. Like, no one knows really what's going on right now.
Oh, God.
So that's kind of a little bit of a bummer, I'd say.
Well, we both grew up on Long Island where venues and the cool venue and all these major venues changed all the time. I remember seeing a show in Babylon. I saw Shai Hulud open for Shelter and Glassjaw.
Yeah, was that at the Legion Hall?
Yes.
Babylon Legion?
Yep. And I would go to shows at Deja One, and I hear about the Crazy Donkey and all these incredible venues all across Long Island. So your musical up.
That's where I live, Babylon. So that was cool for me. We did Converge there. I was much younger.
Wow.
The Vanderbilt, that place was great.
That's the Plainview one, the Vanderbilt?
Was it in Plainview? I don't know. The Sahara was there.
I saw MXPX with Good Charlotte and Ultimate Fakebook at the Vanderbilt.
That's
Good
classic.
Charlotte opened up for MXPX. It was pretty wild.
We had the Downtown in Farmingdale, which had almost every show, and then the Local 7, which had which had almost every hardcore show, and then the Long Island Zoo, baby.
Well, we're
Newfound there. Remember that? You remember Sports Plus in Lake Grove?
I don't remember that. I saw Newfound Glory open for Less Than Jake in Oceanside at this, like, it's a club, and Newfound Glory broke the stage. And
yeah,
I
think there was maybe three shows there, and then never again.
Yeah, it was horrible. But it was Newfound Glory broke the stage, and this was when the first Covers EP came out. This was like pre-self-titled album. It was pretty crazy. But Long Island, I mean, we're both from there, and last time we spoke about this, and we can get into Keep Flying, obviously, later, but my Long Island scene was not hardcore, was not punk, was the ska scene. I was really into it.
We were in it. That was our shtick, dude.
Yep. And right now, actually, Jeff from ASOB is killing it with his solo act, Jeff Rosenstock. But when we were doing it, I mean, Edna's Goldfish, Step Lively, The Lightweights, all these. Wait, what was the other one? Chimichanga? Like, all those bands.
Yeah, that was the beginning. Then you had Wave 2, which was Premarital Sex, 32 Degrees in Hell, High School Football Heroes, ASOB, Forced Laughter, all those bands. Spider Nick and the Mad Dogs.
Yep. And there was Channel 59, which is...
Channel 59, Dan Deacon. He's very successful now.
He is huge now. He's a main stage Coachella act now. It's pretty insane.
Different kind of thing, but a thing nonetheless.
He's original.
I mean, when he first started doing the Dan Deacon thing, he was only playing ska shows because he didn't know what else to play. My old ska bands, Drop of Jeffrey and the Vagabonds, used to play with them all the time. Play with him all the time, rather, because he didn't know how else to get booked yet. He wasn't sure what was... Clearly, he was at the beginning of something new.
And now I think that Dan Deacon opened up for when Miley Cyrus played with the Flaming Lips, like Miley and the Dead Pets or whatever.
Yep.
Dan Deacon opened up for that tour. So that's...
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
That's amazing, right? It's kind of like the Katy Perry Start on Warped tour, you know?
I'm loading some Polar Seltzers into the car right now.
Okay. You do you, boo-boo.
Feels nice.
I just thought of the clear Pepsi when you said that for some reason.
Oh, Crystal?
Yes.
Crystal Pepsi?
Yep.
Classic.
That was awesome with
brought it back. You can buy it again.
Really?
Yep, it's back.
The commercials were the Van Halen Right Now. I remember that, and it was like the video with like all the subtitles, like Right Now, blah 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 blah, and clear Pepsi.
Yeah, they're back in business with the Crystal. I think it's a limited time thing, or it was like last month.
It's kind of like when Harold and Kumar came out here, they made a fake White Castle on Sunset Strip for like a pop up type thing. Obviously, I think there's one that I could think of in Lawrence, but they don't have any of them out here. So were you in ska bands in high school? Were you in bands? Like, tell me about your musical upbringing.
So I started off in a band called Battery Brain, which was like a rock band. My friend Amanda played keyboard for a little while. We had two Andrews in the band. One was White Andrew, and one was Brown Andrew, because the colors of their skin. But this is, you know, no one's racist here.
Like, no, you're just being descriptive.
That was their nicknames from shows before I was even in the band. So
it's okay, I'm Juice Scott.
You know, I'm not going to not say that. That's what it was. And our buddy Matt, we used to practice in Woodbury. So that happened, and then I was the drummer for that. And then I started getting bored of that. So this band called Drop It Jeffrey that already existed, I like snuck my way in, just becoming friends with those guys from... And our drummer was a female, Liz. From shows, I weaseled my way in. I think like the first show I played with them, I played like Glockenspiel and like floor tom.
Wow.
And like some other junk, and then I like worked in playing Barry Sax in the band. So we did that, and then I was also at the same time drumming in an 18-piece ska core band.
Whoa, 18-piece? That sounds like an orchestra.
Yeah, it was 18 people. We had three trombones, two trumpets, three saxophones, one guitar, believe that or not, two singers, one of the singers mostly just screamed, and then two keyboard players. One actually played piano, same woman from my first band, and then my friend that I weaseled into the band who played synth very poorly.
So did they? Could you all fit on a stage? Like how did that work?
No, never. No, it was like half the band would be on the floor running around. The gimmick was that there were so many people that you didn't care. The horn section would just run around all over the place. There'd never be enough microphones. We're playing small ass shows.
I'd love to see a video of that. If you have a VHS,
I think I could find video for sure.
That'd be awesome.
We just had fun. You know what I mean? We definitely were told you guys love to have a good time. You love to have fun. And that's all we did.
Do you remember a place called Club Rum?
Yes.
I played there with Big D and the Kids Table. I remember that. My band, We Are Groove Animals. And ASOB was on that show, actually. It just made me think of that.
I played that exact same bill.
You did?
Wow, we just did a full loop back to the house. We're here.
Wait, are you talking to me?
Dude, you forgot his drink. I played that exact same bill, but not that show. It was a show at the downtown that was also Big D and ASOB.
That's pretty wild.
Was opened it.
That's awesome.
That was fun.
Yeah, I mean.
So I did that, and then my first full-time touring band was a friend's band from Connecticut called the Flaming Tsunamis, and they needed new horns. Their horn section quit, and I joined.
On Barry Sax?
So did one of the trombone players from the Vagabonds. We joined together.
Did you join on Barry Sax, or did you?
I joined on, tenor and Barry. Played okay. Both. The first tour I did with them, I don't think I had my tenor yet. So I just brought Barry. We went to Canada, and I sat with a Barry Sax on my lap in a minivan for the whole tour.
You didn't have a case?
I had a case, but it had to go on my lap. There was no other way to sit.
Oh, God.
Very, very small minivan. But yeah, if it wasn't for that band, I would not be here, because I learned pretty much everything DIY style and how to start touring from our singer, who ended up becoming my best friend. And, you know, he was also straight edge. We both went vegan together. We went vegan because we went on a tour with a band called Call It Arson, and they were two vegans, one vegetarian in the band. So we learned a lot from them and opened
Fish
my mind
went
up.
Vegan for Lent.
Huh?
Fish went vegan for Lent. Yeah,
good
he
for
did.
You.
And I learned about veganism actually through like Anti-Flag and Midtown, believe it or not, through that
Hell
stuff.
Yeah.
And you learn about like Food Not Bombs and all that stuff. But anyway, we're going to...
Goldfinger has a lot of vegan songs.
Open Your Eyes, dude. Open Your Eyes. But that was even after that. Yeah.
Whenever I listen to that still, any Goldfinger stuff, especially the Animal Liberation songs, I'm always like, this is pretty awesome. John Feldmann... He's pretty awesome. I think it's cool. I mean, the guy's been busted by the FBI multiple times now because they think that he's involved with a bunch of animal liberation stuff, which he may or may not be.
Yep, no, that's been going out and about. He was kind of like a Banksy in that world, which is kind of wild. But anyway, we're going to take a short break, and we'll get back and we'll actually talk about you hitting the road with bands you've played in, and then just pretty much everything else is road, road, road. So... Stick around for JJR. I hope you're having as much fun this time as you did last time. And
oh yeah, this time it's smooth. It's even smoother. I feel good about it now.
Good.
I'm in a great mood, man. This tour we just finished was basically all sold out. It feels good.
Well, it's a shame it ended kind of shoddily, but at least the rest of it killed it, right?
Yeah, but then we had Long Island the next day, which was a home show for me. We did two shows. We did both Revolution and AMH, so it was solid. But anyway, let's take that break.
All right, we're gonna take a little break. Hello, welcome back to Waldman's Words. We were talking about some really fun things over commercial, and now we're going to make this unfun again. So, JJR, let's get to actually being in a band and touring.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the serial killer stuff. But
oh, you know what? Fuck
mind.
It. Fuck it. Mobile. You know what? You're never supposed to trust someone with two first names, like Chad Allen, or let alone three first names, like John James Ryan, because... Yeah. When someone is a big-time killer or serial killer, just so they don't confuse, you know, because what if there's another John Ryan who kills people, but it's not John James Ryan, then that guy's going to get a lot of flack. So the more you know.
I will say this. There was a John Ryan who was on the no-flight list for a long time, and every time I checked in, I have to go to the actual desk. I couldn't just print out my boarding pass ever until I made, like, a very long appointment with TSA to clear my name from being flagged.
That's
crazy.
It
is annoying having a very common name, but it is what it is. I like my name.
Well, I don't know any JJRJ, So you're definitely that.
Yeah, I got the junior too, so I feel good about that.
Do you think that if you have a son, he's going to be JJR3?
100%.
Okay.
You know why? Because when I was growing up, there was a kid I went to school with, and his name was James Lawrence Boyle IV, and I was always so envious that he had that IV at the end. I think that's awesome.
It's a legacy.
It's so cool. It's just, it's old style, like, thinking about, like, Henry V, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. Like, that's, like, a crazy thing to think about.
Very European.
It doesn't really happen now, today's day and age. Like, people name their children whatever the hell they want, which is fine.
George Foreman, dude.
I don't know.
George
Foreman.
I was
jealous of that kid because he was a 4th. I'd like to think that when I'm, if I'm ever a grandfather, if I had a grandson who was the 4th, or a granddaughter who was the 4th, either way.
Well, George Foreman and Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, his daughter's named Deandra. His sons are named Deion. I think George Foreman has like 5 Georges in the house.
Yeah, you can name whatever you want.
That's true.
If I only had a daughter, maybe I would name her John also, the 3rd.
You could spell it like J-A-H-N or something. Jahan.
Why not?
Life is short. And her life might be short if her name is John. So anyway, so...
Oh my goodness.
Whoa. Zing. So,
anyways,
touring. So, what else?
Yeah.
What else before you got involved with the Wonder Years? You've also played in other bands, correct?
Yeah. So, I toured full time with a band called the Flaming Tsunamis and lived in Connecticut and Long Island. Then I joined another band called We Are the Union out of Detroit. Well, Ann Arbor and Detroit.
I went to U of M,
area.
Dude.
So like 2007, I think I was gone like the most of any year I've ever been gone because it was back and forth TFT and WATU tours that just kept going. They kept interchanging. One would end and the next one would start. And then I was also living in Michigan at the time. So I lived between Long Island, Connecticut, and Michigan back and forth. And then 2008.
Where'd you live in Michigan?
I lived in Northville with our bass player. I lived in Royal Oak with our drummer for a little bit. I lived in Ann Arbor in our trombone player's basement illegally. I lived in, I think that's it.
My best friend currently lives in Royal Oak, very close to the Royal Oak Music Theater. That's a great venue. I don't know if you've ever worked it, but it's awesome.
Oh, yeah, plenty. I like that place.
It's a good place.
The zoo.
Yep. So, and then you ended up doing some work. I don't know, because I feel that you're... Well, in general, right now, you're a hyphen because you do so many different things. But for the Wonder Years, you were definitely a hyphen. But would you say that your primary one was tour manager?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely TM'd them for 6 years.
Wow.
All of the international tours would be just me on crew. The band could never afford to have anyone else. And for the first few years of the band, I was with them before Hopeless, before management, before UTA, you know, booking agency. So I did merch too. But that was because I did that with a Loss for Words first. Like when I departed We Are the Union in 2009, I immediately started working with a Loss for Words because they were my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing for them. And we did the Ghost Bus tour, which was the Loss for Words, Wonder Years, and Energy. And at the end of that tour is when Wonder Years were like, we think we need a new guy to help out. And I was like, yeah, I want to be that. Actually, what I wanted to do was play keyboard in their band when Mike Kelly quit. I kept trying to convince them to let me play keyboard
because
I was super into it. And they were like, no, we're not going to have any more keyboards anymore. I was like, all right, well.
They weren't stoked on it anymore, you know?
Yeah, they were like done with that.
And then I believe I met you at the Chain Reaction Upside show, I think Tonight Alive open, which is pretty wild. And they just announced that they just signed a Hopeless, so it's amazing how it all becomes cyclical. So you did that, and the next thing on my sheet is actually that, you know, you're an artist manager now, which is pretty wild, but I'm an artist manager. I don't do what you do. I'm not on the road with them. I think in the trenches, as you would say. So who do you work with? Who have you worked with? And what sets you apart from a normal suit like me? You should see what I'm wearing right now at Adobe. Oh, we lost him. Is this still recording? Hello.
Oh, I'm in Jeff's forest.
I don't know what happened with the interview, where we were, but we cut off for a second. Shit happens.
Yeah, I'm in Jeff's Forest here driving to 80, so it was a little bit of cloudiness on the frequencies. I got T-Mobile, so there's probably no tower here.
No, it's all good. I was just talking a bit. I was like, he normally chimes in by now. But so you are a more unconventional kind of manager because you're on the road in the trenches or in the shit with your acts. Can you talk to me a little bit about what sets you apart from, as I said before, a normal suit, quote-unquote, like me, even though I'm wearing sandals and pajama pants right now?
Oh, that's nice. I'm in Crocs all the time.
Well, I mean, you're a medical professional, and that's what they do.
Yeah, it feels
good. So what's, besides your Crocs, what sets you apart from the other managers?
I mean, you know what? I'm going to just say it.
You could be brutal. I don't care.
Not brutal. No. I'm nothing against it. Everyone does their business differently. It's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the main thing. So this band Sleep On It, right? This is the easiest, like the most recent way that I can put it, where it was very apparent to me how other people view me. The band Sleep On It from Chicago, they opened up for 4 years on this tour.
Mm-hmm. Buck Foley is going to be on my show. There you go.
Right. Buck's a great friend of mine, also a manager.
Mm-hmm.
So on the last day, we did the AMH show. It's like the second show, and they weren't playing. Just came and hung out, and they staged over. I like the guys. At the end of the night, after we were in the parking lot, they were like, listen, man, we really want to thank you for taking us out. Like, that's really awesome. You gave us the opportunity. We learned a lot from you. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, you know, I appreciate the really kind words. And they apologized for me for some things, stupid stuff, arbitrary stuff. But I was like, you know what? I'm not exactly like Buck Foley, and their TM is also Buckley. I was like, and I'm also not exactly like a TM like Buckley. I'm somewhere in between. And before I could say anything more, Zek, the singer, he just straight up went, dude, you just gig. I just watched Keep Flying rip a gig. You get it. You're in the dirt with us. And so that's kind of the only, and I said that once before, I think in the last interview, I'm still like in the dirt with people. I still tour manage and I still play. I'm going to an art space in Hazleton, PA right now to play a show with my band a day and a half after this 4 year tour is over. So I'm in the dirt with these people, and I understand not necessarily more or better than any other manager, but I still see it. It's in my face, so I have a grasp on reality.
Well, all of our experience make us who we are, you know, so...
Absolutely.
I mean, for me, what got me, I guess, as many clients as quickly as I did was that I was in a band that did well, and a lot of the artists could see that, you know, I speak their language. And for you, not only have you been in bands that have done well, but you've been on the road with bands that have done well, and you've managed whilst... See, if you're going to bring back like the third and the fourth, I'm going to bring back some old English whilst on the road. You
right.
You speak their language, and the language is dirt. It's the language that you don't become fluent in until you've done 30 days on the road, and then you speak it fluently.
It's dirt, man. I mean, you and I both know, and everyone knows, it's millions of musical artists. There's a reason why you go through Penn Station and you see these amazing, incredibly talented, gifted musicians who are in there playing because they could never figure out how to put their product together in a way that they could brand and you know, profit from.
Sad.
They're insanely talented musicians.
Better than me.
They don't know how.
I can tell you that. Those guitar players in the Subways or in Penn, they're ridiculous, but obviously.
They're amazing
musicians
all over the world that are amazing. How many of those actually make it? Less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 1% actually make it where they can make career money from it. So a lot of the bands that, I mean, you and I both work with, there's not a lot of money being made, if any money being made, or is they're losing money, but they're trying anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being able to realize and grasp the fact that, you know, every artist is in a different place and a different schedule and a different budget, it's very important. I did some TEI stuff with Jen Kellogg, who does the accounting for Warped.
Can you explain what TEI is to the people listening?
The Entertainment Institute.
Thank you.
And she's wanted me to do like a guru session on.
It's kind of like SYO, you know. It's all these initials.
Yeah, exactly. She wanted me to do like some online stuff, which I haven't had the time to. I would love to, but on Warp, maybe 2 years ago, they were doing like once a week like classes for like new TMs, and she asked me to speak at the classes for budgeting, making budgets for tours. And I went there, and there was a bunch of other teams there, and then some high-profile teams there that worked for large artists, and then some middle range, and then me, with, you know, in between. And I just didn't say anything for a while, because everyone was talking about, like, arenas, and they were talking about buses, and this and the other thing. And there was a silent moment, and that's when I realized, oh, I should probably say something here. And I began to start talking about, all right, all that stuff is really cool, but most of the artists are not on this schedule. Let's stop, rewind, and let's talk about making a budget for a band that has $0. How are we going to make a budget for as close to zero as possible? Because there's no money coming in.
Right.
It was really cool to have like all those different dynamics. And at the end of this,
hello. So
yeah,
you're in the shit,
and
you're on like, your conference right now talking. So continue. Sorry.
Yeah, Jem was just like, it was really cool that you were able to bring up that kind of stuff, because that is most artists, at least there's everyone starting there, not the put together artists, but mm-hmm. everyone else is starting, and that's pretty much how I do everything. So, you know, I work with a lot of smaller bands. My band is small, like all my other bands in the previous lifetime was small. A lot of DIY stuff, and that's how I do everything with SYO as well, like with management stuff. 4 Year is the biggest band I have,
mm-hmm.
but even on this last tour, we went back, we did smaller rooms on a smaller ticket price, and we sold it all out. The band has never once in their career had a pre-sold-out tour ever.
In their entire career? Wow.
Yeah, they've sold out shows, but only day before or day of. They have never had an ad mat that had sellouts on it. Months before we left for tour.
That's insane. Good stuff.
Yeah, so like that's cool, and we're going to replicate that hopefully in the fall when we do the full U.S. Same type of thing. Cheaper ticket.
A full-blown assault on the whole U.S. Sorry, I had to do that.
So, like, that was a really fun thing for them. Like, they were very appreciative of me, and, like, before me, they had different management. They had different agent. Our agents also have a big part to do with that. We work with APA now with Jason and Brad. The team is like, there's a new wave, and I said this last time, there's a new wave of music industry workers coming in right now, of people that were in bands or used to tour,
mm-hmm.
or things like that nature, and I know that might be a little threatening to everyone who has a livelihood in the music industry, but like, this is what happens, and we're doing a good job. And all of my friends that were in bands prior, or you know, did DIY bookings and things like that, that are doing well for themselves, we're all doing well, and
Well, it's because they get it.
Yeah, man. Like even you, like we're all on the same.
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
New wave of music industry personnel, staff.
It's a collective.
Correct. We bounce ideas off each other. We work more nicely with each other as opposed to headbutts. And, you know, friction.
Where do headbutts get you, right? They don't get you anywhere, so.
Like, I think we're less afraid of stepping on toes because it's even more of a shark and minnows pond now.
Well, how do you keep flying? Speaking of which, how do you keep flying? How do you do that while being a manager? I'm assuming you have a hand in managing a band you're in. Tell us about keep flying.
Well, luckily, I'm with a band with 5 other people who understand when I can't make shows because I'm working or I'm occupied. They understand, so I'm lucky that I have that. But I mean, me and our singer kind of just like worked out all of our touring around my touring schedule and his work schedule, since we're the oldest too, and everyone else has that leeway where they either aren't working or they have the schedule that,
or they're crashing at home,
right or crashing somewhere.
It's a lot easier to tour when you have that.
Yeah, so I don't know, I mean, I definitely wouldn't be putting 100% into it if I didn't think it was going, if I wasn't receiving 100% back. But for God's sakes, like, the band only has 4 songs on the internet, and we've already been asked to play almost a dozen major festivals without me using any sort of networking at all. Just being asked outside of anything to do with me.
And you were just main stage at So What? Main freaking stage.
It's very important to me that I do this band the same way I did every other band and not just ask for favors. I can. I could very well just ask for favors, but I'm not. Because I don't want to see one kid write on Twitter, oh, the only reason this band got this is because, you know, this person's in the band. No, no. No, we just are writing good music and people like the band or they like us. Like, so it feels good to do that. It feels good to have that. And the band hasn't even been a band for a year yet. We've been doing all this touring off of 4 songs, so that's why I'm like 200% in at this point.
How many songs do you play in your set?
We play 7. Okay. One is an old song that came from what the band used to be, the two brothers of the band. We're in a band called Survey Says. We like took that song and rewrote it to be a Keep Flying song. And then we play 2 songs that are off of our new EP that'll come out in May.
And what I said to you, and I think you really, I said this to you while I was on my honeymoon when I first really started digging in, was that it reminded me of Less Than Jake meet, I don't know why I said Jake, Less Than Jake meets Set Your Goals. And
right.
that was totally meant as a compliment. I really dig it. It's really high energy. It's catchy. And there's horns. My God, there's horns.
I woke up this morning to a Facebook message. I showed my drummer, Peter, but my friend, Aud Lou from home, who is starting to tour now as well. She sent me a message to apologize that she didn't take photos at So What Festival. She was there, and she didn't get to see the band because we opened pretty early. But she came to the, we played the 4-year show on Sunday at Amityville Music Hall. She came early enough that she was able to see us, and her message to me meant so much. She said, "I didn't realize that I needed this until I saw it and then realized this is like something that I've been missing."
Wow.
Like, it was the biggest compliment on the band yet. Like, I've had a lot of compliments about, yeah, the songs are cool and the energy is amazing, but she just straight up said, "I didn't realize that this was something that was missing from my life until I saw your band and then realized."
I gotta use that. Awesome. That's really good.
That made me really, like, that made my whole day. Like, put me in a great mood.
That made my day.
Horny. Like, I'm feeling real good about life.
That's a beautiful thing to hear. That's like a line in Jerry Maguire. Like, I swear, that'd be totally something that he would say after, like, Rod Tidwell chewed him out. Anyway, we're going
to... That was cool. So because of feedback like that, that's why I'm like, well, I'm 200% in on the band. Like, I could be home working right now, but I've worked long enough, and I've saved enough now that years later... The last time I was in a full-time touring band was in 2009. It's 2016 the band started. Now it's 2017. I have the time that I can do it. And instead of taking other jobs, other TM jobs or work at home with shows, I'm just doing it. I'm going for it. I'm giving it one last try because why not?
Why the fuck not?
I talked to my mom about it for 5 hours last year. And she was like, why not? Just give it a try. She was like, you got nothing to lose.
That's the opposite of my mom. When I graduated Michigan and moved out here for music, she's like, why? You went to Michigan. Why are you coming to L.A. to do music? So props to Miss Ryan. That's all I got to say.
If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be doing it. Like, she was the one that straight up was like, listen, you love this. You love to entertain. She's like, I know you love what you do. I know you love your work. I do. I love my work. I love to work, which I know you're the same way. That's what makes us who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of what I do. I'm, like, happy to watch and help other people succeed. But I'm an entertainer. I was born an entertainer. I know I have charisma, and I know I enjoy making people laugh, and I enjoy performing. And so,
Well, that's the best advice. It's funny because the last thing we have is advice, and that's honestly the best advice that you can give, and it was given without you directly saying it. Enjoy what you do. Love what you do, and you will succeed, and the world will see.
Yeah, like, I'm not rich. I'm certainly not rich. I still live at home.
You're not taking me to Mastro's when you come out here? That's bullshit.
I'm 30 years old. I live at home, but I'm only home 1-2 months a year, and I got a my grandfather who raised me, who I live with, and my mother, who they have a list of things that need to get done at the house. They need me there. I got no reason to leave. You know what I mean? I don't have a partner at the moment. I'm very busy with work, and so, and it's a perfect location for me. I'm in the Northeast. If, to do what I do, I got to either be where you are, or I got to be in the Northeast. I couldn't be somewhere else and make everything so much harder, transportation-wise.
Well, for this show, you could have been anywhere, and I appreciate you taking this call from the road, literally. Best of luck with all the Keep Flying shows, and congrats on a very successful four-year tour. I'm very happy for you.
Yeah, we'll be announcing the next one, I think, in like a month.
Sweet.
May time. The support's really cool. Like I said, the room, it's very similar to this tour where we're doing like appropriate-sized rooms that are going to get people excited. Like, oh, I get to see this band in this room. Hell yeah.
That's awesome, man. I'm really excited.
And then Keep Flying's got a bunch of tours this year. Light Years is going to put out a record.
Wow. That's a blast from the past.
All my artists, I think, are putting out, everyone I work with, I think, is putting out some sort of release this year.
Well.
Yeah, even 4 Year. 4 Year's got a release coming out. I'm not going to say what it is.
But no, you don't have to.
It's something different. It's not a conventional 4 Year record. This band I work with from Wales, they got a single coming out this week, Junior. Homebound is working on demos now. Light Years is going to do a record. FCC is going to do a record. Transit, unfortunately, is dead. They're not going to do a record. But
R.I.P.
R.I.P. But yeah, everything's going. ECC at home in Long Island. Our calendar's filled with shows. We got the Bronx on Easter. I'm very excited that I'll be home to run that show. That's cool.
Well, we're going to have to say goodbye, but we could talk later.
No, we couldn't. We must stay.
Okay, fine. So this interview is actually going to be going on all day, every day.
No, it's okay. We got to go.
We got to go. But thanks again for doing this. And what JJR actually said last time, unless he's not happy with this anymore, find him at a show, talk to him, ask him questions. He's extremely approachable.
1,000%. Please. For the love of the planet.
Yeah, save the planet. Talk to JJR.
Just come to my face. I've never not spoken to anyone ever in my life, I don't think, at once.
And try not to steal any passes from him. We're going to go. Bye.